Welcome back, 917. Simmer, you remember Mike Komisarek?
Oh, absolutely. First round pick the same year as Ron Hainsey with the Montreal Canadiens.
Okay, I'm terrible with timelines players leave teams and join. So the Montreal-Toronto thing, you got the big deal in Toronto, right? Were you there then?
I had already left. What my memory is hit, and it was nice to have Claude Julien on yesterday. I can remember Mike Komisarek and Ron Hainsey playing for Hamilton in the American Hockey League. Claude Julien, the coach, being Montreal's farm team at that time, and they got off to just an incredible start to the year, lock it down defensively, and then Claude got called up to the NHL, and both of them went on, although Mike had a more successful career with Montreal, right? Ronnie didn't really make it till he went to Columbus in the expansion, so that's my history.
My memory of Komisarek is having a very unfortunate rivalry with Milan Lucic when he was with the Bruins, where it always seemed like they dropped the gloves and Komisarek got dusted every single time. Yeah, but for whatever reason, he kept answering the bell.
He got a big, fat free agent contract from the Leafs and just was no good.
The wheels were gone, right?
Yeah,
I think played at the University of Michigan. And like I say, that at the time, I wonder if Pierre Dorion might have been running the draft for Montreal way back when. And old Ronnie Hainsey out of UMass Lowell, JR. Hope I'm right on both those.
There you go. Mike Komisarek, anyway, probably celebrating with a nice Chianti. Because he turns 40 years old today.
Nice.
As a matter of fact, thanks to that big fat contract. Yeah. Hopefully, he saved it and has spent it well.
And they were showing athlete meltdowns yesterday, and one of them was the Briz. And the Briz's time, and man, oh man, Jer.
Which one?
The one where
he talks about the spaceships?
Just a terrific press conference.
Humongous big.
I have no confidence right now when he went through it, but do you know he's collected $1.6 million until 26, 27?
Wow. Can you imagine what that's like? It's like Bobby Bonilla, right? He's still getting, a $1.5 million till 2030?
Yeah.
He gets, you probably, a good accountant would tell you, or a financial analyst or advisor would say, no, take the money now. I'll invest it for you. You'll make more.
Yeah.
But there's something about, and whenever the date is, July 1st rolling around, and somebody dumping $1.5 million into your bank account, and you have done nothing and had no involvement with that organization or company.
Yeah.
For however many years now, where you go, oh, God, my life is good.
Yeah, and the team's been sold a couple times. You're just an item line, right? It really doesn't matter. Nobody cares. And then, as you said, the theory would be, well, why don't you get it all up front? Well, what if you blow it? Well, the person that blows their money has probably also traded away all that future money anyway, so take it up front. But, yeah, I still agree that that'd just be pretty cool to see that. You wouldn't get a check in the mail anymore, although you get a copy of it, but just say all of a sudden a nice little deposit come July 1st.
Fine. Final payment, 2035.
For Bonilla?
For Bonilla.
Is it $1.5 million a year?
Quickly perusing. $1.19 million a year.
Another 15 odd years of getting that? And he's been getting it since what? Mid-90s? Or 2000?
2001?
Okay.
Yeah. And that's when, and it's still a lot of money, JR, but at that point, and you know, and by the time he collects a final one.
What?
But still.
It's not going to be worth what it
was. Oh, no. I'm just saying.
I don't find that $1.19 million goes nearly as far as it used to.
No, I know. I'm just saying, though, even when it happened. Compared to now, and in 2035, it will be. But I'm just saying, that's quite a span for the way people see what it means to be a millionaire now.
All right, so Mike Komisarek is 40 today.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvain Côté, we want to go back into Simmer's Washington Capitals scrapbook, is 56 years old today.
Another one of those guys broke in with the Hartford team in the 80s. We picked him up for a second round pick, went on to have a nice career, and historically, he's part of the only trio of defensemen in the NHL history, Jared, to score 20 goals in a season.
Three goals for the same, three 20-goal guys, defensemen on the same team?
Yeah. Two.
Kevin Hatcher?
Yeah, two were 20 and one was 30. And I've told Hatcher was over 30.
Okay, so Côté, Larry
Coco.
Murphy?
No. Larry Murphy, long gone. He would have been part of the...
I'm terrible. Yeah. Early 90s then?
Yeah, you've mentioned his name before.
Washington Capitals, 20-goal defenseman.
Made the Skullet famous.
Al Afraidy.
Big Al. That was pretty cool.
The man with the worst nose in the history of hockey, probably, due to many breaks. Ian LaPerriere is 48 years old.
Not Tim
today.
Hunter?
Well, that's just big. LaPerriere's schnoz is so far out of alignment.
Yeah.
Like, it's an all-timer.
Yeah.
It's going, and I don't know if it's left or it's right, but I think part of his nose, like the cartilage part, the hard bony part at the top, it's over underneath his right
that's
eye.
Yeah.
And then kind of ducks the end of it, the tip of it kind of ducks back in. to normal position. That's how misaligned it is.
You try to do cocaine, you don't even know where it end up.
No, exactly.
And then we had a guy, Mel Engelstad, the mangler. And the mangler had a little curve where he had taken so many rights where you could just plant your fist. And I think the mangler...
You know what? That's an interesting thought to think. Yeah. Now, most guys are right-handed and throw rights.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're a big fighter back in the day, are you more likely to have your nose pushed over underneath your right
arm? Oh, absolutely, Jared. Because also the code then was, there's no holding on, boys. We're just going. We're going to put on a show. And you're just going, no. Remember when Jay Miller and John Cordick used to throw 5,000 punches and neither would
rock
dent each other.
Rock 'em, sock 'em robots.
Yeah, and the mangler, though, it was funny. He would, he'd just take them. Then I think he got it fixed at the end and is a firefighter out west. Played a few games for the Caps.
Former Ottawa 67 Tyler Kuma is 32 years old today. He was a first-round draft pick of the Minnesota Wild. Unfortunately, I think he suffered, a knee injury.
It was a knee injury.
Yeah, was it with the 67s or after he turned pro?
No, it was right after drafted and never the same.
Never the same. Ended up playing, and he can say this. He played one NHL game. Oh. He got into one game, did Tyler Kuma. Yeah. And last on the birthday list today for this January the 19th, in terms of hockey, Thomas Vanek is 38 years old today. He may have been traded. It's between him and,
Sillinger?
Nope. Traded, the most times traded for a second-round draft pick at the trade deadline is between Thomas Vanek and probably the guy that was played for the Leafs. I think he was for the Rangers. He played in he's on TV now. Oh, God, what's his name?
Not Mike Rupp.
Nope. No. Oh,
there was a defenseman that...
No, he's a forward center. One of those guys at the trade deadline, good face-off, defensive. Every team wanted him at the trade, and he got traded for a million second-round draft picks.
Did he finish out with the Kings or something when they were poor?
Oh, God.
But are we talking about the brother of... It's not Dominic Moore.
Yes.
Okay.
Dominic Moore, thank you. Okay. Probably traded for 15 second-round picks. Okay. Good one, Simmer. Thank you very much. And about five people on... see, if people were right with me, they actually had the name on text, but not to that. Okay, 9:25. Let's get back to last night's game, take you through it. Again, couple of talking points, I think, for a lot of people. The old schmoz in the middle of the third period as Buffalo scored its game-winning goal. Certainly has a lot of people's noses out of joint. Speaking of which, here's how it sounded on the Sabres TV network.
And a quick pass finds Kyle Pozo, and the veteran will bring it up to center ice. Takes a big hit out to center as he made the dump in, and now Pezzik comes in, Olofsson as well, and the Sabres are going to get away from the crowd now. Jankowski's got behind. Everybody scores! While all heck was breaking loose in front of the benches, the puck comes free, and Jankowski says, I'm taking it to the house. It's 2-1 Buffalo.
Well, you look at the bench of Ottawa, too. They're all kind of wondering what's going on. Why wasn't the whistle blown?
There he is. There's former Sabre, and for a brief time, Ottawa Senator Rob Ray. On the Sabres TV network talking about that play in the middle of the third period. And again, I think the question for most people is, why wasn't the whistle blown in that situation? You had eight players, four from the Sens, actually even five, but four Sabres, all in a big schmoz after the big hit by Brännström. He goes down. There's a Sabre guy that kind of piles on him. But he gets up right away, and to Dave Poulin's point, and he thought, it was his opinion, that he probably should have blown the whistle. Yeah. I know you're of that opinion. I don't share that opinion. Yeah. I've watched it enough times to go, if the mandate is to keep the play going, I understand, because to me, it was breaking up. I could see, not physically see, but I could see how an official would have been raising his whistle to his mouth to whistle it down. And at that point, the players just, they part like the Red Seas and go, we're going to go about our business now. And so whistle goes down, play continues. Unfortunately for Josh Brown, he decides that he's going to try to go end to end because, well, I'm not sure why. And Jankowski says, thank you very much. I'll take that. Goes in, scores the game-winning goal.
And as I say, that is the key, JR. Whatever we think, the whistle didn't go. And I've got to tell you, have you gotten a text from Gary Galliott this morning? Because the amount you've used schmozzle would just have
Don't you think it's a perfect, like,
absolutely.
Gal's a trademark.
Absolutely. But you've worked that perfectly. I just think he'd be smiling like, wow. That's
back to our moral sports days.
Train my JR. My, you also got in. You modified it a bit about the coming in early and going home late.
No. The story behind somebody's going home early or thought they're going home late is that's mine.
Galley
actually, I challenged him when we were working together. I said, I want you to use that on a Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. And he said, I will. And not only did he do it, he did it in a playoff game, not leading up to a playoff game, in a playoff game.
Nice.
Oh, man, he's a good man. Anyway, so that was one of the stories from last night. The other was DJ Smith's decision at toward the end of the game as the Sens got the power play to not pull his goalie on one of two opportunities with an offensive zone faceoff, both at the beginning of the power play with 3 minutes to go, and then on a whistle and an offensive zone faceoff about halfway through the penalty, decided neither time to A, use his timeout, or B, pull his goaltender. And so that, you know, and this is not hindsight. I think in live time, I think many of us were a bit perplexed that he chose to not only do either one of them, both of them, but either one of them as well.
Yeah, and I'm using hindsight in a bit, Jared, because when they first started the power play, I wasn't saying it, but I'm thinking it overnight, and this is just stepping back. And as I said, like everybody else, I've said many times, a young coach, these are learning moments. You sit down, and I think as a management group and coaches, post-game you have a discussion. If I had a do-over personally, I just look at the season, look at it where Buffalo's at, look at a fun young team and a real nice power play, and I'm like, hey, as soon as that power play starts, and I know Pooley took it a step further, JR, of getting possession, I still am just where the season is at. I still would take my chance and already have the goalie out, because even if I lose the faceoff, I still like my chances at 6-on-4 of already having the guy out there. I would have called a timeout and said, hey, boys, let's get at her here. Let's keep them in their own zone. And 6-on-4, I like our chances of scoring.
Inexcusable to not use the timeout. I would not have used it to start the power play, but you would have used it in that faceoff in the middle of the power play, and I would have used because I want to drop something, but B, I want to rest my my big guns who have been out for the first minute, and I'm putting them right out there again. So a twofold reason there. And the other reason to go 6-on-4 and pull your goalie is because the extra skater out there, if you're worried about possession and losing a faceoff, I'm sorry, the goalie that's guarding your own net at that moment in time is not going to help you recover the puck in the offensive zone if you lose. He's going to help you potentially get the puck possession that you want because you've got two extra skaters on the ice.
And you also, JR, there's no doubt, and I'll say this as a goaltender's perspective on a 6-on-4, there's all no doubt you're on your heels, right? I mean, even the guy taking the draw, but the rest of the group is like, man, it's almost 2-1 out here, right? I mean, you are really feeling like there's numbers out there. So I agree. I don't like the idea of you have to win the faceoff. No, let's get all six guys out there and let's get after them.
Yeah. So they did neither. And so the penalty expired. They never really got anything going on that last power play. As good as the power play was for parts of last night, they ended up with 9 shots in the 6 power plays and a goal. The last one was one of the worst ones, actually, to be honest with you. Not only did they not score, but then the game, Buffalo scored and the game expired and the timeout was never ended up being used. So whether that's, I guess, a learning thing, to me, I don't know. I think I understand that, you know, coaching staff, and there is learning opportunity. To me, that's like that's out of the handbook, man. That's an auto timeout every single time. There's no excuse for that.
No, there isn't. And on the bench, okay. And again, I'm only assuming. I assume that Bobby Jones is tied into. I think it's Capiano that has the earpiece, or is it Davis Payne? And if they don't, I'm maybe off. But usually, the eye in the sky, that's the purpose. Man, that's your whole purpose of being up there. Hey, guys, whatever's going on in the bench, whatever the game is, hey, let's get a timeout here. That for sure should have been
called. What would be the purpose of not calling the timeout? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well,
what were you saving it for?
I'm not sure, JR. And as I said, this is difficult, but I really look at situations like this. Like, I kind of took it that they didn't really think about it. They just wanted to get them back out there. But Pooley says, hey, they probably discussed it and decided not to. So I have no idea.
You could see the three of them. There was a TV shot, and Capuano kind of walks in and he's gesticulating with his arms, and Payne is saying something, and DJ's there as well. You can tell the three of them are talking about, strategy, obviously. Whether one of them is advocating for a timeout or not, we have no idea. But they didn't end up using it. I think that was a fundamental error that I would expect. Yeah. You know, as you said, three guys who have now been head coaches, the other two in other spots, and DJ Smith here into his third year, that you'd be well past where when and how you should use your timeouts. Yeah. That's such an obvious one for me. Yeah. Not Monday morning quarterbacking or whatever.
That's an easy one. And it would almost be, as I said, we talk about football often, a play that you've already talked about. Hey, we're ever down by a goal, we get a power play. And if we don't have a power play, of course we're going to end up using our timeout. And I do think this opens up an opportunity, JR, because they're probably listening to most of 4 hours. I think a PowerPoint laser presentation by myself, yourself, and Hammer, we'll just come in there and maybe you know, set things up for it.
The art of the timeout use.
Exactly.
We'll copyright it. Yeah. We'll send it out. It'll be distributed across the National Hockey League. It'll become the de facto handbook of how to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. What is the bigger talking point from the Sens' loss last night? Was it the schmoz, the non-whistle, and the resultant goal, the game-winning goal, or was it the whole no timeout, no pulling the goalie thing on the last power play? And numbers pretty consistent right across the board all morning. It's running about 70-30. It's right now 72-28. People actually more fired up about the non-whistle and the goal than they are about the lack of timeout, lack of goalie pull during the power play. So let us know what you think. Go to our website, tsn1200.ca. Let us know on your about our Tool Equipment Store web poll question of the day. Okay. What else do I want to mention? Oh, I wanted to get to the other thing that from a more, I'll say, positive point of view was that Eric Brännström had, I think by all accounts, whether you are a Brännström guy or not, he had an excellent game last night. I don't think there's any disputing that. Played the most he's ever played in a game, over 20 minutes, 8 minutes of which he spent with Thomas Chabot. During those 8 minutes, the Sens absolutely owned possession. Now they put him in an advantageous spot in that it was a lot of ozone faceoffs and out there with the big line as well. So, you know, you got a lot of pretty talented guys with the puck, but this, you know, you still have to do it at the end of the day. It would appear like the coach is coming around a little bit on Eric Brännström in terms of the amount of ice time and the amount that and Brännström is giving him good reason to do it. He's had two or three excellent games now. And I think last night, he continues to grow, and it's probably in part due to, or in large part due to, confidence. But as you raised an earlier point this morning as well, I don't know how much he pays attention to the rumor mill, but you know that players do talk. Yeah. But as soon as his name start being mentioned, was it last week? Sort of the rumor came around about Detroit and Yzerman, and you know Detroit
loves
the Swedes, and Lidstrom's back on the scene. All of a sudden, Brännström's playing better hockey. That he's just confident because, hey, if they don't like me in Ottawa, somebody else might.
Yeah, no, it is, Jerry. It really, there's no doubt that it's simple things. Now, if that isn't whatever, I have no idea, but there is no doubt when you looked at him last night, he was far more decisive for a smaller player. He's going into the point of where the puck is at, and he's making a quick chip and getting out of there, right? He's not making contact. He's using his body. And I really look at this as a great question for Pooley because he said, yeah, you can win a Stanley Cup with that. I would like to know, and if we'll go five, I'll give him five, I'm giving him 5-8. Who is the last team, and if anybody's listening out there, including Liam McGuire, who's the last team to win a Stanley Cup with a defenseman that's 5'8"? Now, to that, doesn't mean you can't. The part I would say with Eric Brännström that has been better, and what I look at, JR, he has to become an excellent defender. Not a decent defender. He has to become an excellent defender because for a guy that's cleaning up 20 seconds of my power play, JR, I'm not tucking that guy into my lineup unless he's great defensively. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If he was running my power play and this guy's lights out and he's just, you know, good defensively, okay, I got to see him become Kimmo Timonen, become Brian Rafalski. He has to, and this is, I think, really where the test against Pittsburgh on the road, against Washington, I'm very curious to see how he's able to do, because certainly, to me, he's defending a little better. Mm-hmm. He's escaping the forecheck a little bit better, and that's the part I'm looking to, and I'll give the old green check mark at that point, but there's not enough there, and I disagree with what Pooley's saying, especially if Shabbat's playing. Like I say, a second power play player at that size that you're not sure about defensively, I'm not a chance I'm ever taking a Stanley Cup run with him on my blue line.
I'm just thinking of really small defensemen now. One recently, now his team didn't end up winning the cup, but got to the final. Not the same player as Brännström, but Torrey Krug, right? Pretty small defenseman. Yeah. And we're talking about, are really splitting hairs if they have to win the Cup, or is a team that got to game seven of the Cup final?
No, absolutely it is, JR, just to go along in a playoff. Now, you can also say, and this is also where Krug, I mean, the evolution of his game came a long ways once he got to his mid-20s. I mean, he was terrible defensively. Now, his strength and foot speed, I can argue, and overall, I think is better. But, no, I think there's a comparison there for sure.
How big was Rafalski?
Well, Brian was about 5'10", but like I say, his skating, his feet, and you also look at a guy like Jarrett Spurgeon, the separation, and even Kimmo Tiimonen. Like, Kimmo was really a good defender when he came in the league. That's kind of how he made it. I remember watching him play in Finland, and LA had originally drafted him. People were like, oh, God, he's never going to make it. And Nashville gave him a chance in expansion. But that was the part that those guys were able to hang their hat on. They weren't just guys that came in, and even Brian's case with New Jersey, I mean, Niedermeyer was already there running the power play, right? Now he became part of the top four with Scott Stevens, and you're off and running. So that's the part I'd really, if I'm a Sens fan, there's no doubt with the puck, he's being more assertive. Those passes, to me, show more confident. But just watch him down low there, and does he have the ability to become a really good defender then? Like I said, then you see it differently. And even if you don't, and I agree with what people also say, well, it really doesn't matter at this moment for the rest of this year and probably next year.
Yeah.
He's still just far better, like, starting the season. It could have took you 10 minutes. Now, I also said in training camp that I thought Mete was better than Brännström in training camp, so I have to be careful. Mm-hmm. But in watching Delzato and Brown, I don't care what your philosophy is. I'd love to have all big players. I'd love to have Jay Bouwmeester and Colton Parayko on my blue. Who wouldn't? But they're good hockey players, JR. Just to go out and say you want to get bigger is not going to do anything in the case of Josh Brown.
Another name popped into my head. Now, again, team that went to the final, didn't win. Ryan Ellis, right? Not a big guy for Nashville. Yeah. Not 5'8", but a smaller guy.
No, for sure. Now, I, and again, this is where you'd almost like my theory or thought of a guy like Ellis is that he's carrying probably 20 more pounds than Brännström. But that's not my, I don't know, they'll have the weights in front of me, JR. So, and that's, as I say, there's never a case of that means, hey, this is a blueprint and you can never do it. But as I pointed out, I would generally say, okay, the guy's a good defender. He's an elite power play guy, but you already have that in Shabbat. So, well, I guess we'll see where it goes. But for right now, hey, the positive is that he's playing well. He has fought through a lot for what has been a part of a major trade. It has not been an easy road for him. And I think of lots of situations where it could have been handled a bit better, and especially finish of the season with Zub, and then all of a sudden showing up in camp, not only is Zub gone, but your spot's gone.
Yeah. On text at 12-1200, the part of the whole sequence that makes me question Josh Brown is the fact that Brännström threw a bigger hit than I can remember Brown throwing as a Senator, and isn't that his calling card? That comes from Unsigned. Yeah, that goes to the point. And again, the coach will often repeat with Josh Brown, the reason he likes him and likes to play him is he always uses the same thing. He keeps the other team off our goalie. And I'm just, maybe that happens. I don't really see it. If he does it, he does it in a very subtle way. But again, I'm not seeing it. And to our texter's point here about physical play. And I know the big hits tend to stand out more than the rubouts and things like that, but he's right. Do you remember a really thunderous, don't ever come on my side of the ice, you're going to be afraid of me hit that Josh Brown has put in his time in Ottawa?
I thought he had one, JR, where he did step up and smoke somebody, but I can't remember.
Okay, so one, though,
right? But it was also interesting in playing that clip that Hammer played on the TV broadcast from Buffalo. Do you hear the thud on Brännström when he makes the hit?
Yeah.
And Okposo, like I said. So, and again, I don't even, again, as you say, Brännström can close the contact and make it a little faster. The part with Josh Brown, I just never really understood, JR. There's just no presence on the ice. And I respect it in the sense of he's worried enough about the speed in the game, right? He's trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel around the net that players have any fear, any thought of him. And I'll be honest with you, if that was my role, then I'm getting out the old playoff cross-check stick once in a while, right? I'm going to give somebody a pretty good whack and a pretty good cross-check to if that's the presence you want me to have.
Yeah, for Josh Brown, I bet you, and I think the issue for him is that he's always got to be thinking about what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, I can just see in his head, okay, the coach told me, or I should be doing this, right? He's just not playing.
And you don't want to take a penalty, right?
No, exactly. Yeah. Like all of it is thinking, which slows down every part of your game.
Absolutely. Right? And nowadays, to try to run out, you think, okay, if I go to run out, now it's the knee on knee, right? Or I run out of position and don't get a hold of a guy. You know, when you see it at ice level, the speed of the game, yeah, it's hard to do that. And as I said, maybe in a playoff, would it be a little different? Well, for right now, we're not even thinking about that.
No, that's still a ways off. All right, it is 9:42. Continue to share your thoughts. Text us at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. Tell you what, lucky texter number, while you're texting us, just text us your first and last name. Lucky texter number, let's go with 22 for Willie O'Ree, who got his number retired by the Boston Bruins. It only took them, what was it, 58 years, 64 years? 64 years, I think it was. But anyway, his number was retired by the Bruins last night. Texter number 22 at 12-1200 will score themselves a $100 gift card from Gabriel Pizza. It's our big game contest. Text us right now at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. First and last name. You could be scoring yourself the 100 from Gabe's. We'll announce our winner. Come back with much more after this on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Hosting in the box from CTC. The Sens are back on the practice ice later this morning. We'll find out at that time whether Matt Murray is back in the twine tent. Of course, he was a late scratch yesterday afternoon, 4 o'clock or so. Let the coaching staff know he was not good to go with a non-COVID-related illness, which is the reason Anton Forsberg ended up getting the last-minute start. And Philip Gustafson hightailed it, may have broken Hammer's record of an hour and 55 minutes from Belleville to Canadian Tire Center. May or may not, that's to be determined. Do not believe that he picked up any speeding tickets, though, along the way.
Do you, if the Mur Dog can't go, do you go with Gus the Bus back in Pittsburgh as drafted team, Jer?
Do you think really he's? I don't know. I don't. Is Philip Gustafson really thinking about the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Oh, I think he'd love to play against them.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, absolutely, okay. Jer. And again, not a big deal.
Maybe if he had played in their organization for a bunch of years,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Still team you're drafted by. And no, I'm not saying he's like, oh, I'm going to show you. But I think it would be fun for him. I think it would be a challenge. And to that, from Matt Murray's perspective, I don't know how he'd feel about going back to Pittsburgh. So I'm going to guess he doesn't play. And so it's one of Forsberg. And Forsberg led in the clunker. I didn't think he was bad last night. But I think it would be, and again, I look at all these things, JR, as embracing challenge. I think it'd be really fun to watch Gustafson go in and play against Pittsburgh tomorrow night.
You raised the point earlier that many of us had thought of. This would be Matt Murray's first opportunity to play back in Pittsburgh.
Exactly.
Since the trade. Yeah. So hopefully he's better and is out there. And I think if he's healthy today in practices, I think he gets the start tomorrow in Pittsburgh. At least I'd hope he'd want the net.
One of the things when you do the charter as well, Jared, just got to be careful of sometimes the oyster service.
Yeah. It can be a little bad.
Well, you get the bad barrel there, right?
Yeah,
you know, and
sure.
So that even if they smell good, you know, you're shucking a couple of those, maybe having a Caesar, and that can get the barrel a little fired up.
James Wilson, congratulations. Our latest winner in our big game contest with Gabriel Pizza. Congratulations, James. You've scored yourself $100 in Gabriel Pizza gift certificates for the big game coming up mid-February. Your next chance to win our big game contest with Gabe's comes up on In the Box between 10 and 2. Another opportunity to win comes this afternoon between 2 and 6 with Lee and AJ. And don't forget, we've got Offside for you tonight at 6 o'clock. Eric Macromella, your host here on TSN 1200. JM tweets at us. I think regarding the schmoz and the no whistle, I think the mandate that supersedes keep the play moving is keeping the game properly officiated and the players safe. Was it properly reffed with the ref so busy? Was it safe to let the guy hit Brännström with a clean hit and not blow the whistle while Brännström was getting dogpiled? That comes from JM.
Yeah, you know, JM, I'm not going to go quite safety, Jerry. Just generally, and I know what you're saying about scrums, but you could also, and to more your point, I mean, there's times in and around the net where you got a bunch of guys piled down, and we always say, well, God, I can't believe they didn't blow the whistle. I thought with this one near the bench and with the way everyone was piling on, I thought it would have been a fairly easy whistle at that time. Now, if you had a situation where Jankowski already had a hold of the puck, okay, But in what seemed like a pretty innocent play by Brown at first, I thought it would have been an easy whistle, that's all. But the whistle didn't go, so play till the whistle.
Jake writes, I get Marc-Andre Bergeron vibes from Eric Brandstrom.
Yeah.
Josh writes, didn't Dan Boyle win the cup with Tampa, and he was not a tall guy?
Yeah, you know, great point, you know, and for sure. No, Danny would be a nice example, and certainly a guy coming out of Miami of Ohio, found it a long way, and, you know, he's also legendary. If you want to talk about media, like, where's Brooksy and his buddy?
Oh, yeah. Shorts.
I'm thinking about, you know, you think about the media and people in Edmonton think it's tough. Like, think of, you know, Larry Brooks is one of the biggest names in media. And he got the coach going head-to-head with him in a game.
He got beat up at the bus stop.
And then you got that Dan Boyle one where he just gives it to Brooksy. And then he says,
have that?
Where's your little sidekick,
Brett? Where's your little sidekick there, Brett? Just the way he says Brett. That's a classic as well. Guys, the non-whistle and goal are more of an issue since the coach's poor decision-making would not have arisen given the circumstances following the whistle. That would have been different. Someone else texts in, says, DJ Smith is one of the coaches that will lose his job because of blind loyalty to certain players no matter how they play. So that comes from Unsigned this morning. Yeah. Hetherington is a way better option than Josh Brown. What's happened to Hetherington?
Yeah.
Well, right now he's back and healthy. I think he was out with COVID for a bit, but are on the COVID list and is practicing, but he is part of the scratches for now. But maybe given that turnover by Brown, maybe Hetherington does get himself back in for the game, or maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, and as far as the loyalty, JR, every coach has some of that, and I understand it. And people brought up a guy like Pyatt. Now, personally, it went way too far with Guy Boucher. Pyatt was actually a really nice pickup and a really effective player in his role. It just became where he was kind of the house pet. I never have issues with that. The issue I have for a coach that has been so new to the league, as a general manager, for you to basically turn over personnel decisions to him when he realistically doesn't necessarily know the league well enough, that's a problem they've run into. And then, I guess, are you loyal? Well, you are somewhat, because not only did they trade for him, but Florida dumped him off for a pick, and they gave him a 2-year contract, one-way money.
Tim Stützle has Tim Stützle got against shooting the darn puck? It's driving me nuts. Stay safe. That comes from Sean.
Yeah, just a confidence thing, you know, JR. And I
had five shots last night. Maybe his best chance.
Yeah, and it just, you know, there's times where I know it sounds funny, but that's all it is. And you have to, anybody will tell you, you have to be selfish to be a goal scorer in the National Hockey League.
Hey, guys, we definitely need to be showing Alex Formanton more love. This kid can easily break out and be a superstar. Was a complete... I'm not sure what he's writing here. That comes from Putter. Anyway, I think he's a big Formanton fan who has put up some points. Yeah. And what was the deal? Can someone explain to me? Because when I missed maybe the first 30 seconds of the game last night. So all the lines that we have been, that were supposed to be a holdover from the Edmonton game, like right from the start, all of a sudden Gaudette was playing with Stützle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was going on there?
Didn't happen. I think the top line was back together again.
Like what,
there was a lot of juggling going on in terms of personnel and lines during last night's game.
But it was right from the start. Like like they practiced that with and the coaches. Like, and I understand coaches lie and fib and sell nose stretchers all the time, thinking, I don't know, somehow it's going to affect the game. Whatever. I was just about to say schmozzled, and I got to stop using that word.
Yeah.
Everything was bunched around.
No, I'll use it today. That's a good one. And as far as Formanton, we'll probably do a mid-season report card, and my early report card is needs to learn how to play better with others, JR. There is no doubt that has evolved and gotten better, and wouldn't you know it, Stützle, as planned, moved to the middle, and Formanton has moved up and is just playing with a much better hockey player that can actually skate with him and has the skill to get on the puck. So I think that's a real nice evolution, and superstar I think is real strong. But I always track back to, and I know they were empty nest chair, his 20-year-old year in the American League. If you go through historically and look at those types of numbers he put up, they're
27 goals.
Yeah,
a lot of empty netters.
But it puts you in, it puts you into a really impressive category. So yeah, I think this is exciting. Another one of those young players that we're just seeing evolve in front of our eyes, and we have all, including, well, you've been a big fan. Like, everybody's been a big fan of the attributes that he brings to the table, and it is nice to see that. To me, his vision of the ice and overall play is improving.
Although what's interesting to me is, and I've been kind of up and down on Formanton's season, to be honest with you, and I agree with everybody, he's playing much better hockey lately, is what made me really like him from the start, from his the 18-year-old, when he came in as an 18-year-old who made the draft by one day, he was so young, was the fact, again, I've said this a million times, I watched him play an exhibition game, I don't remember who it was against, and he went in and was a pretty high-profile defenseman, and he skated in on him, and he absolutely papered him against the glass on the forecheck. And I'm like, you know what? Most guys at that, you know, there's too much reverence. There's too much, you know, I don't have my place yet. He went in there, and it was like, I don't give a you know what. I'm going in there, and I'm going to do my job. And I'm gonna hit guys, and I'm going to get under guys' skin. And he did that. And I found for parts of this year, I'll be quite honest with you, that I haven't seen that kind of physical get underneath your skin hockey as much as I've seen in the past, and that's why I was a little bit at times kind of down because I really like that aspect of his game, and I really think that's part of what is, you know, the unique skill set with the incredible speed, and if he can ever, the hands can catch up with the brain, the amount of goals he potentially could score, but that part of it was missing a little bit. I don't know if he's been told to park it. I can't think that he would have. But that's been interesting to me to watch that, is I haven't seen that really, really under your skin physical side.
Me. And Dean Brown talked about on the trip there, they had opened up the forecheck a little bit, which I had not noticed against Calgary. But one of the things along part of the season, JR, they're running a 1-2-2. So what does a left winger do in a 1-2-2?
Right.
Doesn't do anything other than stand at the blue line.
Yeah.
And I also, back to what you've talked about with Brown, I don't think a lot of the positional stuff and defensively comes as natural for him. And when, as you said, always the same thing, you're thinking about a lot of different things as you're just finding your way into the league. So, but I hope as they continue to evolve that we can truly get to that point of, and I don't think we're going to see old Mike Keenan 2-1-2, but I think as a younger group comes along, they should be able to get better and better at putting on pressure. And he looked almost every line, and certainly the combination of he and Stutzla on Brown on a forecheck should be tremendous.
One of the things that just jumped out at me, and I don't remember who it was that was on the ice, is Ottawa's a much quicker team than they were before as well. And a lot of it is just the youth and who they've infused into the lineup. And it's not throughout. There are still some players who that they play that don't have great foot speed, but they are a much quicker team than they used to be. And that kind of jumped out at me a couple of times last night.
Well, it does. I mean, hey, Brännström is a one piece, and you put some other pieces in there. And the other thing I get a kick out, I just love watching Austin Powers kill penalties.
Yeah.
He just flies all over the place. Hey, legs are going, sticks.
You can see
going.
Why he's popular with his teammates.
Absolutely. Yeah, it seems like a real character.
All right, that'll wrap it up for us. Thanks for the feedback, everybody.